A5, number 10, B.
We go to page 483. 483. Line 6, line 5, let's start there. We classify disease as error, which nothing but truth or mind can heal, and this mind must be divine, not human. Now the next one is really the one we want to investigate. Mind transcends all other power and will ultimately supersede all other means of healing. So if we ask on line 7 again, what is said about mind, we would say mind transcends all other power. We would conclude really that mind is the supreme power, or, well, again, a sense, it is power that is so supreme that it transcends all other power. You can see, just a little side remark, you can see that an intelligent reader of the textbook, a critical reader, will say that Mrs. Eddy is very inconsistent. Before she had said, mind is all power, there is no other power, and now here she says that mind transcends all other powers. You can see that the logic is not the logic of the classical period, and perhaps later on or some other year I would like once to talk to you about the logic of Christian Science, which is a completely different logic than the logic of the classical era, which we usually use. But you can see that an intelligent reader is entitled to say that Mrs. Eddy contradicts herself, because the intelligent reader of today does not know anything about the new logic. If he would know it, he would perhaps investigate it a bit closer, and then we see that Mrs. Eddy does not use the classical logic. She uses a very modern logic that was far in advance of her age, a logic that only today one begins to investigate and to consider and to understand. Namely, it's a multi-valued logic, which we will be able to understand very easily when we understand the levels, the chart. So this was just a side note for your information, that we are not sidetracked by this apparently illogical reasoning, because it's only illogical in the frame of the classical logic, not in the modern logic. So let's go back to our tonality. We would see from these four statements we have been considering, we would certainly say, yes, this is very conclusive that Mrs. Eddy attributes the idea power to mind. But naturally, I have taken the four best references in the whole textbook, the easiest ones, and Mrs. Eddy uses the term power, I don't know how many times, but I would say up to perhaps 100 or 200 times in the textbook. And these are only four references. And so we will investigate other use of the term power. We take up, for instance, on page 316, line 316, line 7, I read there, Christ, truth, was demonstrated through Jesus, to prove the power of spirit over the flesh. Just as far as that. Now, can you see that if we say that power is an idea of mind, that the critics can come to us and point out here on this page and say, Mrs. Eddy doesn't agree. She speaks about the power of spirit, not only about the power of mind. And what would we answer? What would you answer? She says so. And now, would we have to give in and say, yes, Mrs. Eddy uses the synonymous term indiscriminately? Or what would we have to answer? Yes. So here it's the power of spirit over the flesh. Now, why isn't it the power of mind over the flesh? Yes? Did you hear it? No? So, will you speak out very loudly when you speak and distinctly? Yes? Well, she was saying that here the question is the power of spirit, but it's the power of spirit over the flesh. Therefore, the theme here is not what is spirit, what is the characteristic of spirit, but here is shown the relationship of spirit to its opposite, its counterfeit, the flesh. And we have seen this is the rule, namely that the problem apparently here is that the flesh has power. That's the belief. The flesh has power. And Jesus had to prove that this is not so. Now, what is the fact about the flesh? What is the fact about the counterfeit called flesh? Which synonymous term? Spirit. You see, now you see the value of knowing the counterfeits of the seven synonymous terms. In the counterfeit of spirit, you have matter, you have flesh. And the moment we have an argument about flesh, that argument must be counteracted by the exact fact about the flesh, which is spirit and not mind. Yes? It's spirit and not mind. So if she wants to express that spirit has power over the flesh, more power than the flesh, or is the only power, and that spirit and that the flesh has no power, she has to use the fact about the counterfeit flesh, which is spirit. So this is, therefore, a combination. Power, mind, spirit, which is dealing with the belief of flesh. So it's already a blending or a calculus of mind and spirit, giving us a sense that if we have to do with the belief that the flesh is more powerful than any other thing, that we have to deal with it through spirit and not through another synonymous term. Could you recall what we had in mind? In mind it was always bringing out what mind itself is. Power, all power. From mind comes all power. From mind is derived all power. It's omnipotent. The moment we come to the problem of resolving a belief and putting instead on the place of a belief a fact, then the belief rules the choosing of the right fact. Therefore, here the belief is that flesh has power, Therefore, it is counteracted by the power of spirit. Now, do you see that? Nobody should go home this week without having seen that. Because I tried to show that over the last few years at various times, but I did it too quickly and I could see that it didn't quite sink in. So I want to take it very slowly this time, and that it sinks in with everyone, so that everyone can stand up against critics. You know, the platoons of Christian Science must be thoroughly drilled now to stand up against the critics of our very scientific and analytical insight into the textbook. All right, let's take another one. Let's take page 109, line 32. The three great verities of spirit, omnipotence. See, we had already the omnipotence of mind before, huh? Now here she speaks about spirit, huh? The three great verities of spirit, omnipotence, omnipresence, omniscience, which means spirit possessing all power, that's the omnipotence, filling all space, constituting all science, contradict forever the belief that matter can be actual. Now, here we have again that power or omnipotence is spirit. This would contradict that reference which we had on page 443, where she was speaking about omnipotent mind as really possessing all power. Now, here she says it is spirit possessing all power. Can you see? Nearly the same wording. Spirit possessing all power. And in mind we had mind really possessing all power. Can you see that the critics can say, well, it can't be clear as it is stated. Mrs. Eddy just uses the synonymous terms just at random. What would we say? What would be your answer? Speak out very loud. Whoever has the answer.
It's counteracting the actuality of matter. Yes.
It's counteracting the actuality of matter. That is the problem here. The problem here stated within the whole paragraph is the belief that matter is actual, that matter is really real and factual and actual and substantial. So the subject is not so much omnipotence, but omnipotence counteracting what? The belief that matter is omnipotent, that matter has all power. See, you throw a stone against the head of somebody and that stone has the power to kill. Well, the belief is that matter has power. Therefore, how do we offset the belief of the actuality of matter? It's by the actuality of spirit. So spirit rules the tone of the sentence, of the problem. And power is a secondary value in it. And so it's a blending again of power, mind with spirit, but the ruling tone is spirit now, not power. Can you see that the ruling tone is spirit and not power, because the ruling subject is matter actual or not? And she says, no, matter is not the actual, spirit is the actual. And then as a subtone, therefore spirit has all power, fills all place, is all science. So again, you have a combination of mind and spirit. Just as we do it in arithmetic, we not always say, well, five. The other says, oh, yes, five. Yes, five. Huh? Then we say, let's have an evening with seven. Yes, seven. Seven. Huh? But you have 27 or 72 or two sevens or two times seven. You see, you begin to combinate. And so we have to see the textbook as one great symphony. All right. Let's take another one. Page 20. Line 19. It's out of the context, really. But it's quite enough. We don't have to read the whole paragraph. There she says, and when error felt the power of truth, the scourge and the cross awaited the great teacher. Here, if we would investigate the synonymous term truth, we would say, well, here she speaks about the power of truth. And we would perhaps write down into our list, on the truth, we would write down power. Would that be right? It's still a power of mind, but why does she say power of truth when it is the power of mind? Because of error, huh? You see, here she typically brings up the question of error and says, has error power? Is error the great power, the only power, the greater power, or what is error? Has error power? And she says, no, error can be overcome by truth. And in order to overcome error by truth, truth needs the help of mind, huh? Takes in the help of mind, the power of mind. Says, this is the truth as mind, that truth is the power that can really deal with the proposition of error. Have you seen? Again, see, if you remember when we did mind, there was always a question just to ask, what is the nature of mind itself? But the moment we took other passages about power, we began to see it was always showing the relationship of the synonymous term to something else. Therefore, the relationship of fact to counterfeit. And the moment you have that, then the counterfeit begins to define the use of your synonymous term. Here, the question is error and not power. The question is error. Has error, can error withstand truth? And she says, no, no. Error cannot withstand truth. If error is touched by truth, error will have to disappear. Therefore, truth deals with error and can do it because it is powerful. Yeah? But you must be 100% sure. 100% sure, huh? Let's take another one. 111. 111, line 11. The principle of divine metaphysics is God. The practice of divine metaphysics is the utilization of the power of truth over error. Why don't you say that the utilization, the practice of divine metaphysics is the utilization of the power of mind? Because metaphysics has to do with mind. Why doesn't she say it's the utilization of the power of mind that has to do with metaphysics? Why does she say the utilization of the power of truth? Because it's concerned with error again, huh? See? It's the utilization. If she would have said, for instance, what is the basis of metaphysics, then she would have said mind. But here she is attacking error, so error can only be counteracted by truth, and so it's again the power of truth over error. Yes? Let's take another one. 378, line 16. This latter occurrence represents the power of truth over error, the might of intelligence exercised over mortal beliefs to destroy them. Again, you have the power of truth. Again, the reason, it's over error. So it isn't a question, what has power? Has mind power or has, what has power? That is not the question. But the question is, here is the proposition of error. What can deal with error? Only truth can deal with error. Therefore, can you see, say, if you had another argument, say that error has a law, that you would here deal with the law of truth over error? Yeah. But let's take another one, 137. 137, line 1. His students saw this power of truth, heal the sick, cast out evil, raise the dead. Why does she use the power of truth and not the power of mind? It has to do with healing, huh? Has to do with healing all forms of error, like sick, evil, dead. Huh? Every time she brings in this triad of, say, of sin, sickness, and death, or sin, sickness, and evil, or so, it is a common or a compound expression for all disease or all disharmony. Now you say inharmony. I always say disharmony, sorry, inharmony, and that is dealt with truth. So here it's not just error, because we know that each synonymous term has various counterfeits. So a counterfeit of truth is not just error, counterfeit of truth is also disease. So when disease and the various forms of disease are under consideration, and to see that that can be healed, then it is truth that heals it. And in order to heal it, that truth needs power. So it's the power of truth. See, we have now taken 4 references on mind and 4 on truth. So numerically or quantitatively, the critics can say there are just as many statements with mind as there are with truth. But if you compare those two now, those statements, you still have them in your ear, you know that in mind she was actually defining the nature of mind as power, as possessing all power. Whereas in truth, she is showing that this truth is applied to error, to something outside of itself. Huh? It's correcting something outside of the synonymous term. And so that outside, that counterfeit, is defining the use of the synonymous term. Let's take another one. 231, 21. To fear sin is to misunderstand the power of love. Just as far as that. Here she doesn't use the power of mind. She uses the power of love. You have now another combination, power with love. Huh? Why? Fear. Huh? Can you see how exact? Huh? In the others where we looked up the combination power with spirit, the power with truth, you never had fear in it. But the moment it comes to fear, which fear says fear is really terror, can really act as really power, as a terror, and we fear the power of fear. So she uses love, because in love there is no fear. Yes? Do you begin to see the exactness of Mrs. Eddy's wording? Naturally, I've taken very obvious ones. Very obvious ones. Let's take another one. 232. Line 16. In our age, Christianity is again demonstrating the power of divine principle, as it did over 1900 years ago, by healing the sick and triumphing over death. You feel it is demonstrating? Couldn't I also say, but we had something similar in truth, the power of truth, because there, we had power of truth, it was saying that it was to heal the sick and cast out evil and raise the dead. Here too it is healing the sick and triumphing over death. Why shouldn't it be truth? Huh?
I don't know. I don't see the difference.
You don't see the difference?
No,
you see?
Principle.
Yeah?
Principle covers the whole
principle. Principle covers the whole synonymous, the whole range.
Uh-huh.
Well, yes.
In the age of Christianity, the work was supposed to be done by a person, which is the name of the principle.
Yes, yes. So, your interpretation would be that in the age of Christianity, how do you say it was not person? It is not person that healed.
It's accomplished by a person. A person is the negative of principle.
Yeah, yes. So this could be an interpretation which you would actually interpolate, because it isn't said so. Huh? And there we have to be careful that we don't try to find a reason because Mrs. Eddy said so and say, well, she must be right, so we try to find a reason and put something into the text which may be there but may not be there. But here you get an incident or an example which shows you something, namely that sometimes you have to read the whole subject round about that statement in order to get the sense what is under discussion. Here, for instance, you have to read, if you want to be very sure not to interpolate something, you have to read the preceding paragraph, because the preceding paragraph sets the stage. Now let's read the preceding paragraph and see if that would not make more sense. Oh, we have to stop here. Good.